Heaven.
Yeah, we're missing Kathy Kleiman as well, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I don't actually have the list in front of me. Glenn does. So. Glenn, it's Marilyn. So, I'm sorry. The list of members is posted to me. Away from communication, so I'm probably back to the list of the members in the task force are posted.
Yes. I posted, I sent you a mail, Marilyn, perhaps you haven't got it yet.
Yeah.
But what I'll do after the call, which I put all the names on a list for you because I gave you a URL to open up a link.
Oh, great.
So I'll put them on a mail for you, all right?
Thank you.
And I'll add you to the other task forces too.
Yeah, great. I think I heard someone else join. Yeah? I thought so as well. Did someone just join the call? I guess not. Maybe somebody dropped off.
May I just say something as far as the logistics of the call are concerned? I asked for 1 hour 25 minutes. Perhaps
I think for today that should be sufficient.
That should be all right. Oh, that's what I thought, and then perhaps the next calls can be longer.
Hi, this is Kathy Kleiman joining the call. Hey, Kathy, apologies for being late. Good morning.
Do we have anyone on the call who's not from Europe or from the coast of North America?
Yes, you have Barbara on the call, who is from the west coast of North America.
Good morning.
It's better than being from Hawaii, which would be 2 hours even earlier. Yeah, actually, I think we're at the most one person shy. So Glenn, can you go ahead and do a roll call, and we'll just go from there.
Yes, I'll do the roll call. Amadeo?
Yeah.
David Mayer.
Here.
Jordan Buchanan.
I'm here.
Kathy Kleinman.
Here.
Maggie Mansurka. Marilyn Tate.
Here.
Nicholas Lafferin.
Present.
Thomas Rissler.
Yes.
Tom Keller.
Yes.
And Wendy Seltzer. Have we got her on, Thomas? Or are you going to stand in for her?
I will talk for LAC.
Good. Okay. And Steve McAllis.
Here.
So, in fact, we are one person short, man, for the ISP.
Okay.
Over to you, Bob.
Thank you. I think our first order of business is to go ahead and elect a chair, and then I can step aside from being chair and be the staff support person. So I'll entertain, I know we had one nomination on the list for Jordan Buchanan. I'd like to know if there are any other nominations that people would like to make at this time.
Sorry, before that, this is Amadeo. I have one question because, you know, I just discovered that, in fact, just rereading the list of the members, that I'm here and David Maher is also here. We are both directors of PIR, Public Interest Registry. And, I was rereading the bylaws. There is specific provisions for the decision-making instances where no two employees or directors of any given company may sit at the same place. There is no reference for just a task force. But anyway, I wanted to raise this for consideration of the rest of the members, whether you consider this is a problem or not.
That's a good question, Amadeo. Thank you.
Amadeo, it's Marilyn. I think that it's very important that people declare their conflicts, and I do think that this is a conflict, but I don't think that it should be the kind of conflict that prohibits participation so much in the task force. But I, one of the things that I think is very important is that people declare their other relationships which might bear, and so I appreciate your mentioning it. I think there may be, from time to time, there may be other people who have conflicts as well. So, you know, it sort of ought to be a standing requirement that people declare those.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, this is Steve Metallis. One question that this might raise is whether there is a difference in terms of participation on the task force between representatives of constituencies and those who are not representatives of the constituencies.
There is not, according to the articles of to the bylaws.
According to the
bylaws. Probably the reason why.
The PDP says that the council can appoint individuals to participate. Each constituency appoints individuals to participate, and additionally, the council may appoint up to 3 outside advisors to sit on the task force. Mm. Normally, an advisor has a somewhat different role than a participant in terms of decision making.
Right, and that's a different category of discussion, isn't it, Steve?
It might make a difference in terms of whether there's a conflict if they're not two decision makers. I mean, for example, if you had 2 members of the board who represented the same entity, then you might have a different situation because they could both vote.
Yes, this was discussed briefly at the GNSO call, where Amadeo asked specifically as a non-com appointee whether he could participate in the task force, and received explicit permission to do so in that capacity. I think he didn't realize at the time that David would also be participating on this task force.
Let's just kind of parse this for a minute. I'm not sure. David is here representing the registries. Are you not, David?
That's right.
Okay.
Not only that, but when I was appointed to the PR board, I specifically asked and get assurances from that they will never get any instruction, and in any case, they will never follow an instruction within the GNSO, any of its senses.
Right. I just want to be sure that I was understanding. So there's one question which I think has already been resolved, which is. Do the folks who have been nominated by the nominating committee, what kind of status do they have within the task forces and within the council? Of course, they are full voting members. So then the question is just sort of a coincidence that we have 2 people who have a relationship with PIR, but they're here wearing different hats. I think there may be a different question, Steve, that you might be asking, and that is, what standing do liaisons have in task forces? And that, I think, is that the question that you were asking?
Well, that could be a question, too. The PDP doesn't seem to provide for that.
The
PDP says you either are a representative of a constituency or you are an outside advisor. And it explicitly says there can be outside advisors, so...
Right, but in the creation of this particular task force, there were participants outlined as including the liaisons and then up to 3 outside advisors in addition to that.
Barbara, that's not the question. Participation isn't the question.
Voting is the question.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to be clear.
Yeah. Well, maybe this would be a question for all task forces, not just for this one.
Right. No, I think it's a good question to raise because it's going to come up in each of the other ones as well.
So perhaps we could...
I think we need to solicit the general counsel's opinion on this, and he's not on the call this morning. He has another call that he's on.
I'm happy to send him an email, or Steve, you might, whichever one, and maybe we can just... I never know whether it's... Maybe we can table this or move it off to...
Yeah, I don't think it's something we need to decide right now.
Right.
I certainly have no objection to Amadeo's participation.
By the way, thing of Article 0.5A, that all the members are members, collectively call us representatives in all of their vote. By the way, this is not a decision-making instance. So, I mean, the voting rights here are fairly limited.
But this is Kathy. I think this is an important question. I think it is coming up on other task forces, so it'll be interesting to know what the answer is and have it spread across all the task forces.
Okay, so I'd like to ask that that somebody take responsibility for crafting a question to the General Counsel, and I'll certainly pose one as well.
I will.
Maybe it would be really most appropriate for Barbara to do this, since it's a common question for all task forces, and I understand that she will be staff support for all three. I think
right.
It would be a natural thing.
Yeah, I think that it's going, well, for these three, and then if we have one for the other thing as well, for the registry services one as well. So I'll pose it as the general question if somebody wants to pose it as a specific question for this task force.
Sure.
And we'll get an opinion probably by the end of today.
Great.
Okay, so that aside, which was a very good question, and I'm glad we got it out in the open. I'd like to
Barbara, just a minute, but I'm not sure we've resolved the I think we've resolved one thing about the conflict, but I'm not sure we've resolved the other. I just had suggested that if anyone else had a conflict, that it's important that they declare it and that be documented. And conflicts, in the way that we understand them in the commercial sector, have to do with if you are an employee or you are going to be affected by a policy that you are helping to devise. And as I said, it doesn't mean that you're disqualified by any means from participating in it, but I think it's just important to have it, for integrity purposes, documented on the record. So maybe we could just ask people to send you an email if they think they need to declare anything.
I think that would be appropriate. Why don't we have you actually send them to me and to Glenn, and we'll put together an appropriate list of where people have declared potential conflicts of interest.
Barbara, what is your email address?
It's Roseman, R-O-S-E-M-A-N, at ICANN.org.
Thank you.
On the system certification, would I have to do that as well as a registrar was potentially inflicted by this whole policy?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's a little bit better.
Okay. Would I have to do a conflict of interest as well? So I'm a registrar, I have to look at that policy after all. Do you have to read one of these as well?
But they're simple. People do this all the time in the business world when they're participating in policy.
No, it's just interesting. I've done that before.
I think it goes, this is Jordan, I think it goes without saying that the registry and registrar representatives for practically any PDP are likely to have some impact on their business in terms of the process.
Yeah, I don't even think we need to pose it so much in terms, even though I said it, in terms of a conflict of interest. It's more a statement of interest, if you will, of how, you know, what your I keep wanting to say allegiance, but allegiance isn't quite the right word. What your association is that would be most, you know, that would be directly affected by the results of this.
I really disagree with you. There's nothing wrong with having a conflict of interest, and you know, this is a grown-up organization. We can acknowledge that. That's not a bad thing.
Right. I think that what Amadeo was pointing out, where there are two people from the same organization sitting on the same...
Well, exactly, the conflict of interest is a question of whether there's incompatibility or not.
Right, but that there's a potential conflict of interest there in terms of collusion or acting in the interest of the registry as opposed to your own particular focus, which you've already addressed and nobody, you know, regards that as a serious threat. But I think saying that you are working for a registry or a registrar does not necessarily pose a conflict of interest. It's just simply what your interest is.
I also don't think, this is Kathy, I don't see any reason to disclose it because it's obvious on its face.
Yes, for most
traditionally
people,
in the ICANN context, we've, at least in the
details. Guys, I really disagree with you again.
Wait, can I finish my sentence, please? Conflicts of interest were designed to reveal where you might have allegiances that weren't obvious on their face. So with Amadeo being the director of PIR,
right,
that wasn't something I knew, so I'm glad he raised it. You know, people being representatives of the registrars and registries, that's pretty obvious. So I think a conflict would be useful here if somebody's representing or works for someone that would not be obvious on its face and might, say, be a representative or be affiliated with another constituency. That would be useful to know.
But let me explain why it's important to disclose it, because it's not just what we know. It is also what the rest of the stakeholders know, and not everyone is an ICANN aficionado. I just left the developing countries, most of whom are still really struggling to understand ICANN. So why don't we err on the side of, you know, keeping it really clean and easy to understand.
Yeah, I don't see any objection to asking people to state what their, you know, what their relationships are, what their associations are that are going to be directly affected by this policy and its outcomes. That's I think an appropriate thing to ask of people,
and so that's
fine. We're going to collect that information,
and that obviously includes if you're paid by someone else that you should that might have that is not visible that you should disclose that.
Okay, so we are asking that everybody please submit an email with those statements to both Glenn and Roseman at ICANN.org, and we'll collect them and post them in an appropriate manner. So I think we should move on to electing a chair so that somebody else can take on these tasks. We received one nomination on the list for Jordan Buchanan. Are there any other nominations that people would like to make at this time? Okay, if not, then I'm going to close the nominations and ask there to be a vote for, affirmative vote for Jordan. Glenn, can you do a roll call?
Accepted.
We do need a second.
At least knowing whether he was willing to serve or not before voting.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Amadeo. I'm certainly willing to serve as chair if I elected to do so.
Thanks, Jordan.
This is Steve Metalis. I'll second the nomination.
Thank you, Steve.
So I call the names: Amadeo. David Mayer.
Yes.
Jordan Buchanan.
Actually, I think both David and I don't get them.
Sorry. Jordan, you are. Kathy Kleinman.
Yes.
Maggie's not on the call yet. Marilyn Page.
Yes.
Nicholas.
Do I get to vote since I'm the alternate and Steve is the primary representative?
Have a vote on that.
Okay, well, then we leave Steve to vote on that.
Yeah.
Thomas?
Yes. Oh, which Thomas?
Thomas Rusler, sorry.
Yeah.
Thomas Keller?
Also, yes.
And Steve Metalis?
I'll vote yes, but I also want to note on the record that this is not waiving any issue about who is entitled to vote in this task force.
Right. I think that's going to be another discussion. So.
Yeah, obviously, it won't make any difference in this vote. So.
Right. Okay.
So that's cool. Carried with the majority.
Thank you. So, Jordan, I'd like to hand over the call to you if you're at a place where you can... Are you out of the taxi yet?
I'm not. I'm going to... I'll do my best here. I'm going to have to apologize in advance because I am traveling right now and on my cell phone. So I'm going to cross my fingers, and the reception's been quite good so far and hopefully warming. So... throughout the rest of the call, and if not, I guess hopefully Barbara, you could jump back in
if you get disconnected.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess why don't we go ahead and kick things off briefly then. I'm glad that we have been able to get represented in most of the constituencies on the call, and I think it's probably the first task that we've actually been given by the GMSO Council is to get back to them with some sense of whether we think it's realistic to complete our work within the PDP timeframe as described in the bylaws. And I guess part of that is to have a discussion internally as to what we think the scope of that work is, which should be obvious from the terms of reference, but perhaps there's some additional thought that we need to do in terms of the process by which we're going to get there, both in terms of task force and consultation with our constituencies, and to get some sense of, a response to the council so that they can they can react appropriately to it. I'm not 100% sure what the council is going to do with that information. There's not really a mechanism in the bylaws to change the length of time allocated to the PDP process, but...
Jordan, it's Miriam. Yeah. There isn't a mechanism, but we do have the ability in council to give an extension, and the point of council was we wanted to understand this ahead of time rather than be caught with having to just give, 2-week extensions at a time if all of the task forces are faced with the same problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I agree. It's very important that we get a sense of what we think a reasonable plan for moving forward is and advising council that. And then, like I said, it's up to them to figure out what to do with that information. So I guess with that in mind, why don't I just encourage, any thoughts or discussion that we might have at this point about the process from this point out or what people view as a good plan for going forward and any initial reaction to that. Is everyone familiar with the new PDP process? That's probably a good place to start.
This is Steve Metallis. That would be a good place to start, I think, because I've heard different numbers of days and so forth. So perhaps we could just explain what PDP says, and then we can discuss whether that's realistic or...
Yeah, exactly. So, Barbara, could you maybe run us through the PDP?
Yeah, I have to open something here on the laptop that I can take us through that. We'll just take a moment, sorry.
Go
ahead. Basically, the way that this works is... There's a couple of different time frames that come into play, and a couple of them happen before the beginning of the task force and are sort of irrelevant for this particular task force. And then the others that we're concerned about come into play once the task force is formed. The first one has to do with a public comment period that started when the GNSO Council determines that they're going to initiate the PDP. And that lasts for 20 days and has already concluded before we had the first meeting of the task force. That would be one question as to whether we wanted to perhaps reopen the public comment period to coincide with some of the time that the task force is meeting. So that's the first public comment period. Then once the task force is formed, there's a 40-day period where the task force meets, and the first 30 days are work of the task force on issues that they have set before themselves or have had the GNSO determine are the scope of the task force. And then at the end of 30 days, the constituencies are supposed to forward statements to the chair of the task force on the issue. Then there's another 10 days during which a preliminary task force report is compiled and forwarded to the GNSO. I'm sorry, to the task force. So this is where you would take all the information that's been done during the first 30 days, you would take the constituency statements that have been forwarded to the chair, and with staff support you would craft a report, a preliminary report, that you would then all review. You would have a final task force meeting to discuss that report, and at the end of 50 days, you would create a, so that would take place within 5 days of receiving the preliminary task force report, and then you have an additional 5 days to complete a final task force report and distribute that to the GNSO. Then there's a second public comment period. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm missing a step. This you compile the task force report and distribute it to the GNSO and to your constituencies, and then a second public comment period opens that lasts another 20 days, and those comments are reviewed and included in what becomes a final task force report that gets submitted to the GNSO Council. And so that process from the beginning of the task force to the final report being submitted to council is 65 days. And that includes the second public comment period.
Barbara, have you put this on the calendar?
I have not spelled out the dates for this particular one. Right. No, I have not done that yet.
Okay, that would be helpful to do just as routine staff support.
Yeah, I can prepare that calendar.
But let me just do it without even looking at a calendar, but raise a concern about the first 30 days. The first 30 days, this is December the 1st. The first 30 days are missing, and I will comment that the 20-day public comment period was also a problem to many people because it included a holiday, a couple of holidays. But this 30-day period is going to include a rather extensive period of time, and people will not be working in most countries around the world. And I think we need to take that into account.
So we can all convene on January 1st, right?
Or January 2nd, Boxing Day.
Being realistic and pragmatic, how much time are we going to lose? I'm sure we're going to lose a week, maybe two. Do we think we're going to lose as much as 2 weeks?
Yeah, my guess, Marilyn, looking just giving that people's schedules are not going to exactly overlap, is that it will probably be more like 2 weeks than 1 week. Some people may take off the week leading up to Christmas. Some people may take off a week between Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah. Okay. So, factoring that, do other people generally agree with that?
Sorry, may I also just say something? That week between the 29th and the 7th, of January, there will be nobody available to put things on the website.
The 29th of January?
The 29th of December, 29th of December 30th, and then the 31st, and then in any case, the 1st and the 2nd usually are holidays.
Right.
So those 3 days, it will be practically impossible to get things on the website.
Right, so we should factor that. That should be shown on the calendar as well as an issue. So it seems to me that we ought to, at a minimum, extend the first 30-day period by 2 weeks because of the holiday.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I guess the following question is that, sure, it's a given that even if we were to try to meet the PDP, it seems very unlikely that we'd be able to do that given the holiday, but I guess do people have thoughts about whether or not they think that that initial is it realistic to get, you know, back to constituencies and get constituency statements and have a sufficient amount of discussion within the task force itself in order to frame those initial constituency statements that are essentially going to create the bulk of the first iteration of the task force report?
It's just looking at the PDP, and I just want to make sure that my understanding of this is correct. It sounds as though the first thing that this group does as in the first 30-day period is not to meet, but to get constituency statements. And then there's only a very brief period, really 5 days, to try to put all that together into a report and try to reach a majority, a supermajority on the report. I wasn't involved in the development of the PDP, so maybe I'm misreading this, but it sounds as though I agree that December 31st is not a realistic deadline to do anything, but it doesn't sound as though from this that we would actually be doing anything as a group between now and the time that the constituencies report back. Is that is that correct, or am I misreading?
Can I speak to that, Jordan?
Yeah, go ahead.
There's actually a couple of different ways to view that. The first is that in this particular case, the declaration of work has spelled out a number of tasks that information that needs to be gathered, and you can either assign that to staff or you can take that on as tasks yourself. I think there's actually some sort of in-between thing that should happen in there. But the idea, I think, of having this 30-day period during which the task force is formed and before you get constituency statements is, in fact, to allow the task force to meet and hammer out some of these issues prior to going to the constituencies and saying, you know, give us a broad general statement on this. It's sort of to be able to focus more clearly what the work of the policy is supposed to be that one derives out of the whole PDP, and to when by the time you go to the constituency, back to your constituencies and request a statement, that what you're doing is trying to give them a very focused thing to make a statement about, and to not have it be the more broad general issue as it stands at the beginning of the effort.
Barbara, it's Marilyn. Can I ask a further question? As I understood the task force, actually there is a fair amount of data gathering that needs to be done.
That's correct.
And I don't really think it is, you know, appropriate, myself, I don't think it's appropriate to limit the data gathering just to the constituency. There's such a large population of interested parties.
Right. As a matter of fact, some of the issues that are raised would be beyond, the way that the issue is raised is beyond just the scope of the constituencies. It looks at, we're asked to collect data on existing uses of registrant data elements, for instance, and that, I think, would be useful for us to look at how, for instance, the IP addressing organizations use their information that they collect.
Mm-hmm.
And what they display and the issues that are raised around that for them, because it is slightly different than what takes place on the domain name side.
Right.
So I think that there, you know, in answer to Steve and Dave's question, there are some specific tasks that have actually been laid out for this task force that we may want to examine, even in terms of whether that the data gathering can be done within the time frame that has been allowed, let alone the fact that it's taking place during the holiday season. I think that on a simple reading of the tasks that are set before the task force, the 30 days of data gathering may not be sufficient in and of itself.
The question about the data gathering, who does it again? I'm a little confused. I came in thinking and I'm not sure.
It's left very open. It's one of the reasons why you are assigned staff support, so that you can make this a responsibility of the ICANN staff to prepare, to gather information and prepare a report that gets delivered to the task force, and then you can determine whether that has been extensive enough research
that would be one avenue to take. Another is if you feel that there's experts, if there's expert advice already on the task force, then you can solicit that expert advice to participate in the data gathering. It's left very open, actually. There's no specific method that's directed.
Right, yeah, I think that is actually one of the initial things that the task force will need to decide is how to approach the data gathering process. Maybe it actually, Barbara, would be useful also to review the terms of reference of the of the task force. I don't have them in front of me because I'm in a car right now, unfortunately.
Sure, no problem. I'm going to start with the I think I won't read through the entire description of the task force because it's about three pages worth of material. But I'll start with the purpose of this task force. So the purpose of this task force is to determine A, what is the best way to inform registrants of what information about themselves is made publicly available when they register a domain name, and what options they have to restrict access to that data and receive notification of its use. B, what changes, if any, should be made in the data elements about registrants that must be collected at the time of registration to achieve an accessible balance between the interests of those seeking contact ability and those seeking privacy protection. C, should domain name holders be allowed to remove certain parts of the required contact information from anonymous public access? And if so, what data elements can be withdrawn from public access, by which registrants, and what contractual changes, if any, are required to enable this? Should registrars be required to notify domain name holders when the withheld data is released to third parties? And if registrants have the ability to withhold data from public anonymous access, will this increase user incentives to keep the contact information they supply current and accurate? And then there are some out-of-scope issues. The task force should not examine the mechanisms available for anonymous public access to data. That's a separate task force. The task force should not examine mechanisms for law enforcement access to the data collected, because that varies across so many different local laws. The task force should not study new methods or policies for ensuring the accuracy of the required data. That's another task force. The task force should not consider issues regarding registrars' ability to use WHOIS data to their own marketing purposes or their claims of proprietary rights to consume customers' personal data. And that's just been declared sort of off limits for this discussion.
Well, Barbara, actually, that is the purpose of what that's being discussed in one of the other task forces, isn't it?
Okay, it doesn't say that in the statement, but
it is.
Okay, that's fine. The milestones that have been set are to, one, examine the current methods by which registrars and their resellers inform registrants of the purpose for which contact data is collected and how that data will be released to the public. Examine whether policy changes or published guidelines are necessary to improve how this information is provided to registrants. The second milestone is conduct an analysis of the existing uses of the registrant data elements currently captured as part of the domain name registration process. Develop a list of data elements about registrants and their domains that must be collected at the time of registration to achieve an acceptable balance between the interests of those seeking contact ability and those seeking privacy protection. The intent is to determine whether all of the data elements now collected are necessary for current and foreseeable needs of the community, determine which elements can be acquired accurately at low cost, whether any of the current elements should be made voluntary, whether any different elements should be added or substituted to improve the balance between contact ability and privacy, and how the data may be acquired in compliance with applicable privacy, security, and stability considerations. That's the heaviest of the data gathering tasks. The third one is consider options for limiting the amount of data made available to public access, if any. Four, document existing methods by which registrants can maintain anonymity and assess their adequacy. Document examples of local privacy laws in regard to display or transmittal of data.
decide what options, if any, will be given to registrants to remove data elements from public access and what contractual changes, if any, are required to enable this. And the fifth task is taking into account the outcomes of 2 and 3, re-examine the methods by which registrars inform registrants of the use of their contact data by third parties and the options registrants might have to remove data elements from public sources. The milestones that have been set out, and that's, I think you can tell from the amount of data gathering that has to take place that 30 days is a optimistic view.
I think it's unrealistic, Barbara.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I mean, that's why I actually wanted to run through the milestones, because I knew that they're pretty aggressive. I mean, they're pretty broad
they're
in
pretty
terms
broad.
Of the type of work that we have laid out for us. So it may be more realistic to phase the work of the task force to a certain extent, because some of them are more probably straightforward and require a little, like figuring out how registrars currently disclose privacy policies or how data is going to be pushed out. It's probably an easier task because there's a set of registrars that we can go to see what their policies are than to see, for example, how data is used by people who want to contact, which requires, I think, really broad outreach to the community. So it may make sense to phase the work of the task force and the data gathering, keeping that in mind.
Jordan, this is Steve Metalis. I would support that idea, and I think if you look at the first sentence of the first task milestone, it's a pure data gathering exercise. Examine the current methods by which registrars and their resellers inform registrants of the purpose for which contact data is collected and how that data will be released to the public. It's really asking what is happening now.
Right.
I guess the question I would have, I mean, this gets back to the question that was raised before about who does the data gathering. What would be the best way? That's data that comes really just from registrars in the case of CommonNet and registries in the case of the other and registries in the case of the thick registry system. So is a finite
registrars always?
Pardon me.
It's always registrars. Registries never inform registrants.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's correct. Actually, the registries may hold the data, but they're not the ones that are collecting it or informing. So you're correct. So it's even a more circumscribed group. What's the best way to collect that data so that we have a starting point?
If I may, I mean the suggestion I would make is to have the task force, or me propose a question to the task force that can be sent to the registrars as a collective group and have their responses come to me to collect the data and have a staff person present that data to the in a compiled report to the task force. I think that's the most efficient way to do it.
I think that question could also collect some of the contracts. You could ask them to send us the text of some of the registration agreements, which will have a lot of these answers in them as well. There's a further question, and the milestone itself does mention resellers, which would be upstream from the registrars. So there may be an additional set of parties that we need to send this question to, or should be sending this question to. And the registrars can probably help us figure out who their upstreams are.
Right. I think that there's that the first task is actually one that's fairly straightforward and for which the data gathering should be pretty straightforward. The second and the fourth are the ones that are more broad in scope and that actually may shape the discussion of what kind of policy gets developed more than the first issue, which is simply how do registrars and their resellers inform people of how they're using their data or that they may potentially use their data. I think that one's actually a fairly straightforward one in terms of data gathering.
I agree it's relatively straightforward, but I wouldn't prejudge what role it's going to play on the policy discussion, because I think the reason that it was put first and the reason why in the FUIS steering group most constituencies agreed this was a priority issue was that this is a feature of the current policy landscape, but
right.
There's a lot of uncertainty about how it's actually being implemented.
Let me support Steve's statement in that. And I have heard recently about a significant amount of what we call self-help, where people are behaving in certain ways at their own discretion. That is not necessary. So I think we do need to have some validation of what the present state of play is.
I think that's a given, and I think that we do want to, what may make sense, I think all of these data gathering tasks actually will likely shape the policy discussion in some way, and so we probably shouldn't discount any of them, but it may actually become relevant in terms of setting out our milestones and our reaction to the GNSO is to get some assessment of the effort involved in the various data gathering tasks, because it's very difficult to to inform good to create good policy without having good data in place first. So I would suggest that what we may want to do is think amongst ourselves as well as go to staff and whoever else we think is relevant about getting some thoughts on what the data gathering process is likely to look like and what the effort amongst is going to be.
Jordan, let me ask you a question. I'm actually very familiar with the difficulty of getting information from retailers, not in this context, but in a broader context. What's your speculation, not holding you to it, about the time frame that would be needed to even get something from the registrars?
My speculation is we could get something reasonable from the registrars in can I get you guys, I'm really sorry to do this, I'm just hopping out of my taxi right here and I need to pay, so can I actually be silent for about 1 minute and I'll be right back with y'all?
Sure.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Let me just say something about the difficulty of dealing with retailers. Perhaps I can talk to Ross, who I think TUCAS has the largest contingency of retailers. We have a fairly high number of retailers as well, and it is a huge task to get information back from retailers.
Yeah, I think that's one of the pools of people we're going to have the most difficulty assessing whether we've gotten a good response from, because, how do you measure representativeness when you only get, a certain percentage of replies?
Part of this is to the registrars, and so maybe Thomas Keller has some idea about how long will be a realistic time frame if we were able to agree on a question to ask them, how which I don't think would be difficult, how long would it take, how long should we wait for an answer?
That's a tough one, actually, because I can't speak for the registrars, but the experience I have shown that you would need probably at least somewhere between 1 week or 2 weeks, 2 weeks better. But what I would suggest to do is just to approach a couple of registrars directly and ask them just to provide websites where they kind of do registrations and where you can kind of follow the way of the registration and figure out for yourself how they do it. So just go ahead and ask them for the resellers, and they give you a couple of sites, and some staff could put together a report, which is just an example report, because you will never get all the registrars and resellers and so on together. So it's just like to have a look onto the more or less onto the whole picture by taking out some examples.
As in basically going through the registration process and just bailing out before payment.
Yeah, I think that's one method we may want to use, certainly to verify certain things. But I also think we probably want to solicit, if possible, some outlier representation. Like who do people think is doing the least effective job of informing people and who is doing the most effective, so that we can get a range of, you know, how people are presenting this information. Because I think it's important to know that, you know, whether most people are effectively presenting the information, which I think many registrars are, you know, but we also do want to find out in those instances where it's not happening, how, you know, what that looks like, so that we would be able to craft something that would address those concerns.
I think we might also want to ask, I mean, if we are picking out examples of registrars that either we or someone else has indicated are not doing a good job, we might want to ask a follow-up question, why? And in the process, we may find out things like the purpose for which the contact data is collected may be ambiguous. It may be hard for them to figure out what to say. I mean, I just think we should ask follow-up questions instead of just pointing fingers. It may be useful for the work ahead.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good point.
Barbara, can you help us out by starting with checking with the ICANN staff to see if there have been any complaints, referrals, other information that have been posted to the ICANN complaint process that we should be aware of, or informational process that we should be aware of?
I can check. I'm not sure that that's a category of information that we particularly track in the complaint.
It isn't, but it might have shown up.
Right. I'm thinking that it may have shown up as well, but I'll certainly request that information.
Yeah, this is Jordan jumping back in. I apologize for that. Let me also just pose the question of, like, looking at ICANN, what ICANN staff's received on this particular issue is good, but do we have any sense of what historical data may be out there with regards to any of these questions? Did the work of the previous WHOIS task force, for example, Maryland, address any of the data gathering efforts that we have underway right now, or no?
The work of the previous task force was at a different level. It asked people whether they used all of the data elements and gathered their responses and asked them why they used the data elements. All of that material is archived and is available, but it would not go to this level of detail.
Marilyn, can I add something to that? This is
please.
I'm not sure it's very helpful for number one, but it would be helpful for number two, because it talks about, it doesn't ask exactly this question, but it does talk about, it did ask the respondents about individual data elements and whether they were essential or
Right. That was what I meant. It asked them, Jordan, why they were important.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So I think that works may inform, you know, some of those later questions. I think maybe the study that the FTC did and some of the existing work out there as well may inform some of those later questions as well.
Yeah, I think the Center for Democracy and Technology has done some work on the question of whether registrants are informed of how their data is going to be used. I seem to recall seeing a report from them on that.
I don't remember that. But what about Ben Edelman? Has he done anything that would be relevant?
That's no. I don't think he's done anything specifically on it.
Hmm.
But let me research that a little bit as well. Perhaps that could be part of the preliminary assessment of how much work is going to be involved in gathering this data.
Yeah, I think that would be really helpful. What may be, I think, a good next step for us as a task force would be to spend a brief amount of time looking at the various data gathering tasks and considering strategies in terms of going about that. And I think we may all have different perspectives and may, once we have an opportunity to sit down and look at them in context, have some new thoughts that we might not come up with on the phone. At the same time, if as part of the staff support we could get some sort of review of the existing body of work out there, or body of information out there that may be relevant, and also a consideration of what level of staff involvement might be available for some of those data gathering tasks. then we could sort of regroup around with that new set of information and thinking that we've done on our own and essentially put together a strategy for the data gathering, which in turn would allow us maybe to create a strategy for creating policy that is derived from that data.
Yeah, I'd also like to just mention that because there are the three task forces simultaneously working on the issue, we may want to coordinate requests for information from various groups so that we're not inundating them with three separate requests for the same or similar information. You know, that if we have something we want the registrars to reply to, that we craft that so that all of the task forces can make use of the answers.
Yeah, and that was actually a concern raised by the council in terms of chartering the three task forces simultaneously as opposed to a big task force or something like that was coordination. And now my memory's failing me, Marilyn. Did we make a decision as to how that should be handled, or is it left up to the task forces to coordinate amongst themselves?
Well, we didn't exactly decide how to do it, but I think it falls on Barbara. We did think it was a priority to try to coordinate, and I think it falls somewhat on Barbara as the
yeah, the staff coordinator. The staff support, but let's just say staff coordinator.
Yeah. The chapeau, Barbara. You're the chapeau.
It would probably be a good idea for the chairs of all three task forces to talk to each other.
Yeah. Glenn, you have a call today at 2 and tomorrow at 2 with the other task forces, is that right?
Yes, there's one later on today, and there's one tomorrow.
So why don't we leave that to Barbara and you and the three chairs to... It sounds like, Jordan, that we should try to get together again next week, having all of us studied our tasks, and maybe come up, you know, we can kind of go through in a more informed way. I certainly can put more time to it now that I'm back from Hanoi, thinking about what these tasks are. I would think that a preliminary, it's appropriate to say without, to say at a high level to Council that it, given the holidays and the scope of data gathering, it does not seem feasible to stick with the present time frame, but that we do not yet have a revised time frame to request.
Right. Yeah. I think that's exactly correct. And your suggestion of getting together once we've investigated the data gathering task and got some more information, both internally and from staff, is a great one. And if no one has any objection, then I will convey that message exactly to the council in terms of giving them a brief update or a status update in terms of where we stand on the time frame, which is the question of most immediate concern that they're waiting for us on.
And let me just say that I apologize about this, but this is actually a very bad time for me if we're going to have meetings that last more than an hour. So can we also, I could do meetings on Wednesday mornings or Thursday mornings for more than an hour at a time, but not on Mondays or Tuesdays or Fridays.
I guess the question here is, what are geographic range? Do we have people... further east than rural Europe and further to the west and west coast?
Excuse me, wait, before we leave Tasks and Milestones, I just wanted to put a footnote in. Jordan, I have a tangential, a related issue to raise, and I just wanted to make sure I had a chance to do it on the call.
Sure. Why don't we, actually, why don't we do that now before we leave the Tasks and Milestones quickly then?
With apologies to everyone. We just closed our first public comment period, which was publicized, it was out there, and believe it or not, we got comments. We had five sets of comments that came in, and four of them pointed out that there was a deficiency in our description of work and our tasks and milestones. And so as we go into consideration of, under the idea that good policy and good data are related, I wanted to read to you what four of them said. They all said the same thing.
Okay.
And these are groups, and I think we have to consider this as we go forward.
The groups were Privacy Ukraine, Canadian Internet Policy and Public Interest Clinic, Barbara Simons with USACM, and the Public Interest Advocacy Center, which is in Ottawa, Canada. And the comments said, as we go forward under this description of work, they wanted to add a specific question, whether asking domain name owners to provide personal information is consistent with laws protecting privacy around the world. There's an issue of the collection of the data itself, not just disclosing it, but collecting it in the first place. Under TASA milestones, there was a recommendation, again, from all four of these public interest groups, that that there be a documentation of existing privacy and freedom of expression laws and regulations that are applicable to the domain name system and to its data. And by way of guidance, these comments say, existing summaries of such laws, as well as materials already published by government groups, should provide an accessible base of information. And then the recommendation that we add, evaluate whether changes in the WHOIS data collection should be made to bring ICANN's data notification, collection, disclosure, and treatment methods into conformance with existing legal frameworks. And then there's another task, but I'll leave you guys to review it. It's a revision of the current number two task and milestones, the analysis of the registered data is currently captured.
Yeah, so I think, you know, without getting into a discussion of the merits of the point, let me just say that my personal take on how task forces should be conducted is that, you know, we're given a terms of reference, and we definitely should focus most of our energies on where we've been guided. If the terms of reference are remiss in terms of not providing a useful area that we should be investigating, that either our alternatives generally are either to go back to the council and ask them to expand the terms of reference of the task force, or to have a brief discussion and essentially identify it as an issue for further work, but not to unilaterally decide that we're expanding the scope of the task force.
Well, the point of information,
I believe that what is being proposed here is basically a clarification of what's being a more explicit version of what is suggested in the end of last
year. Yeah, and
master
we...
compliance with applicable privacy, security, and stability considerations, and would count legal framework in with both privacy and stability considerations, so that a trial who breaks law is not stable.
Right, yeah, so Thomas, I think if, you know, we come to the conclusion that it's within the scope of our existing terms of reference, but simply not, you know, the language wasn't as clear, I think that's one issue. If we decide that there's a very interesting other topic that we need to discuss that wasn't in the original terms of reference, have to be approached slightly differently.
And Jordan, let me suggest, maybe Barbara, if you could, and we should all do the same thing, we should also look at the terms of reference for the other task forces and make sure that...
that that's not already covered somewhere else.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, but I would encourage everyone to do take a look at the public comments in preparation for our discussion on our next call, which, you know, where we'll try to take a more comprehensive look at a work plan ahead and a dealing with specific tasks and milestones.
Great. And I apologize, I'm going to have to drop off. Are we going to, is it possible to speak briefly about scheduling, Jordan?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And I think Thomas had just given us the all-important question, which is what is the band of time zones that we're dealing with? And I think it's correct that we only have from Central Europe over to the west coast of the United States. Is that correct?
That's
is there anyone
right,
not in that band?
Yes.
Right, Glenn and I discussed that already. We're Asia free as a matter of fact.
Yes, and there's only, I think, a little farther from Pacific.
Yeah, I think I'm the only one on the West Coast.
No, Wendy's here too. Oh, Wendy.
Is it feasible to move it to a Wednesday or a Thursday morning? Is that, or to move it?
Well, I think moving it maybe to early or later in the either late morning or early afternoon East Coast time probably gets everyone at a, without having to either stay up too late or wake up too ridiculously early in the morning, which is where we are right now, where the West Coast people have to haul themselves out of bed quite early.
Oh, 5 in the morning isn't that bad. You guys want to schedule GNS call for 4 in the morning.
Barbara, I've already intervened on that show. I don't know if it'll help you, but I just... Well, early afternoon, can I ask what early afternoon?
Well, let me ask the people from Europe what they feel like a latest hour that's reasonable from their perspective is.
Well, for once, it would be nice. It would be inside of the working hours we have. Another
right,
so... At night, somewhere between 8 and 10, which would be fine, but I would prefer not to.
So if we say 6 p.m., so that gives us until noon on the East Coast. So actually, it would have to be late morning, probably at like an 11 o'clock a.m. East Coast time slot, 5 Europe, 8 a.m. West Coast. Probably gets everyone in sort of reasonable working hours.
Perfect.
I tend to be the anomaly. I much prefer them outside of working hours, sometimes in the middle of working hours. But so are we saying 11 o'clock?
Does anyone have an objection to that time?
What day are we talking about?
Well, aha. We're not yet talking about a day, but if we can settle on a time slot, then we can look at our calendar and see what day works.
Well, I can do 11:30 on Mondays, but it's very difficult to do 11. I can do 11 any other day.
Well, how about Tuesdays at 11 a.m.? Eastern time and 5 Europe, 8 West
Coast.
That moves it. Are you talking about a particular day, Tom?
Tom won't like that.
How about Mondays at 11:30, just in general?
Mondays at 11:30 may work fine as well. Maryland's the only...
No, 11:30 is fine for me.
Right, no, I'm just saying, if you're free by 11:30.
Yeah. Just to remind people, Marilyn said that she had a constraint of 1 hour on the calls on Mondays.
Not if we did at 11:30.
Oh, not if we did at 11:30.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
so 11:30 Monday.
11:30 Monday sounds like a time slot that will work for everyone then.
Okay, Glenn, why don't you send that out to the group just to make sure everybody...
Yeah, I will do it. Hopefully Maggie can take a look and see if that fits into her schedule as well since she's not on the call.
Fine. Before I schedule the call, I'll send out the times for everybody.
Okay, thanks, Glenn.
And now, between now and then, can we review what's going to happen? Is Barbara going to give us an estimate of...
Yeah, so let me just review. I think that we have two, the objective of the next call should be to get a clear understanding of what the data gathering process and what really our work plan is in terms of, gathering data and formulating policy and dealing with all of our tasks and milestones. And so between now and then, hopefully, we're hoping that Barbara can provide us with an examination of the existing body of information that's out there and what might be relevant to the data gathering tasks, as well as staff support ICANN can provide in terms of the data gathering tasks, just an initial assessment. And as well, we should reflect on what approach we think is most appropriate for dealing with the data gathering tasks in particular, so that we can really flesh out what that process is going to look like. And then I think on the fly, we can probably work out what a work plan looks like once we know how we're going to treat the data gathering, because it seems like the most time-consuming portion of the task force's work.
Yeah, and the other task that I have is to solicit an opinion from council on the various rights of participants on the task force.
Right. Does anyone feel like there's something that else we need to be doing between now and then, or does that seem to provide us with a good path forward?
Sorry, what did you say?
Maybe one point. If anyone believes they have background material, everybody should have read before the next call is distributed as early as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if there is material that's relevant, please point us to it so we can start to get a sense for what's out there already to make our lives easier.
And then just add it to the list, reviewing the public comments as we proceed.
Right. Sure. Okay, great. Well, I think with that in mind, I think we probably got done about all that is reasonable for this initial call, and I think gives us a good strategy ahead. So if there's nothing else anyone wants to talk about, I'll look to close this, and we'll reconvene at 11:30 Eastern next Monday.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Barbara, are you still on?